I think it's human nature to be scared of the future and scared of change that comes with the future. And we talk about here at Grapevine this concept of 11:59 p.m. It's the moment where today, the present, you know, meets tomorrow, the future. And that's where you need to bring your customers to be a comfortable and silly minute away from the future, right? You need to meet them where they're at. And you need to preserve what's important to them while upgrading the things that frustrate them.
Welcome to Season 6 of Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds and stories of innovation thought leaders crafting the future. I am your host, Ian Bergman, and if you're an innovation agitator like me, then this is where you want to be. Some sort of deja vu. It's almost like we've been here before.
Yeah.
Hey, Luca, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ian. Pleasure to be here.
No, man, for our listeners, I'm really excited to have Luca Yiannopoulos on the podcast. And if you can hear it in our voices, we've started this a couple of times. We're living the modern work at home life with family busting in with other technical issues. So, you know, but that's okay.
That is all right. It's summer after all.
That is all right. Well, Luca, I'm so excited to have you here on Innovators Inside. You are a startup founder. You're doing some really interesting things in the medical space. I'm going to let you talk about what you're doing with Grapevine, but I find it pretty inspiring. You're tackling head on this challenge that we all know exists, right? Like there are costs that should not exist in our healthcare system. So welcome to the podcast. Would you mind maybe starting by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing at Grapevine?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my name's Luca Yiannopoulos. I'm one of the founders here at Grapevine. And Grapevine's a project we've been working on for about 18 months, but it started, you know, a couple years before that. Our goal and our mission here at Grapevine is to let doctors and physicians and healthcare practices focus on what they do best and what selfishly, as a patient, I care about most, which is providing the highest quality of patient care. And the way that we do that, the way that we help them prioritize, you know, on the things they care about most, is by giving them both, you know, resources back, giving them time back on their day, and giving them huge amounts of money back in their budget to operate, you know, again, for the sole purpose of the patient without the headaches of supply chain and any costs they can avoid. And a successful sort of benchmark for Grapevine and working with the healthcare practice is saving a healthcare practice more than 50% on their spend, medical devices, you know, drugs and different supplies.
50%. So that adds up, right? That's not just a big saving, but are we talking about everything? Are we talking about everything from like needles to bed sheets to whatever? I don't even know.
You got it. Pacemakers, injectables, the whole gambit. In the US alone, I mean, healthcare practices are spending $500 billion or more on those supplies each year, right? So this thing at scale has the ability to give back our healthcare system, you know, $250 billion. And in doing so, cut costs for me and you, Ian, right? Costs for patients in a regular visit by as much as 50%. So it's pretty profound the impact that we've been able to have on different oncology institutes and dermatology practices. It's cool. And
so cool.
And it feels good.
Well, and I mean, it feels good. It makes an impact. And, you know, the time seems to be right. You were telling me before we started recording that this is an industry, this medical supply chain industry is something that hasn't changed in ages. You were saying centuries.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest players in this space are companies that were established and have dominated for close to 200 years, in some cases, even more. And they're some of the biggest companies in the United States. And frankly, not a lot has changed. And I sympathize with the reasons for hindering change. I mean, I think a small part of every single person adopts the mentality of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Sure.
And that's especially true when the risks of change are high, right? And we're talking about healthcare, where change implemented poorly, you know, carries the risk of failure being, you know, lives, right? So life and death. understand why people are resistant to change. It's not the core focus of these healthcare practices, and the risks are high. And we found ourselves in a perfect time and place to deliver this impact in a nice package that is digestible and palatable for healthcare practices.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, right? And I want to come back a little bit later to this notion of change is hard. You know, there's the buzzwords, there's the innovator's dilemma, there's all kinds of kind of stuff going on here. But for now, let's start a little bit about your origin story, right? You've got family that is in and around the medical community, but how did you get started? This is a little bit of an esoteric project in some ways.
Totally. And it's absolutely not my background or training, you know, healthcare supply chain tech. My mom's a nurse practitioner. My dad's a scientific researcher in the healthcare space. And when I began my foray into this industry, I was a student at UPenn and I was sitting in my dorm room. COVID had just broke out. Classes were on hold and I'm seeing, you know, horror stories related to supply chain failures and shortages and price gouging all over the news. And it's being spoken about by my parents on every, you know, Sunday dinner time Zoom call we were having. So I got involved out of as an emotional response and a feeling of necessity to protect the people that I care about and love. And we were desperate to provide any value or solution to what felt like the biggest problem I had experienced in my life and the biggest threat that me and my friends and co-founders had experienced, you know, in our lives. So we did exactly what our teachers would want us to do. We cracked open our books and our laptops and started looking at different data sets that the school and, you know, different classmates had come across in our academic journeys.
Awesome. Well, and where did that lead you? You were cracking this open. You were looking at data sets. What did you discover?
Yeah, so we got our hands on publicly available data provided by the U.S. government that details the import records, basically in real time, it's just a few days off, the import records of every medical device, every medical supply into the U.S. By doing that, we're able to see during a time of great shortage, during a time of great disruption, who is actively receiving and holding the much needed medical supplies in their hands in the U.S., where is it coming in, and basically, who can deliver it to people like my mom? And with that information, we were able to, you know, contact those people, connect them to my mom's office, and word started spreading through what is now known to be, you know, the grapevine.
I think we just got the origin story, by the way, of the name. That's cool.
So it started spreading that we were able to, you know, help get these different healthcare practices supplies they need when their 200-year-old distributors and suppliers were struggling. So that was our initial project. It wasn't a business. We were just doing things to help and didn't have an LLC and certainly weren't making any money. But shortly thereafter, we end up getting a call from one of these 200-year-old companies who had become aware that we were servicing their customers. I mean, and those are their words, not ours. I didn't think of them as customers or service, right, at the time. But you know, relieving the struggles of the pandemic for these healthcare practices and that they wanted to buy supplies from us. So now this was becoming a little more business and transactional. We got on LegalZoom, registered an LLC and a bank account as fast as we could and started receiving huge purchase orders. And that was the first red flag that there were bigger problems in this space, right? When a couple of college dorm room kids start receiving millions of dollars from one of the biggest and oldest companies in America, to me, you know, it indicates that there's an opportunity to change things for the better.
Absolutely.
Through that journey, we end up seeing a lot of inefficiencies, a lot of problems, a lot of embodied costs that are carried all the way through to the doctor and, of course, the patient. And that was our inspiration to take a deep breath, take a step back, and start with a blank slate, a fresh whiteboard, and, you know, dream big. And that dream becomes what Grapevine is today. If we could at the time, or if we were able to reinvent the entire healthcare supply chain, modernizing it and cutting out all these costs, what would it look like? And it would look a lot like Grapevine.
Well, and these costs, like, I mean, I can't wait to see what you can do with this, right? Because these costs, it's not just middlemen, it's not just brokers and markups that are adding to the cost, right? You were telling me a little bit earlier about everything from wastage at the point of utilization to, you know, being unable to predict. Like, tell me more about some of what you're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the one side, I'll break it into two categories for you. There's before it gets to the doctor's office, and then there's once it's in the doctor's office. And both of those places or both of those buckets, there's huge opportunities to cut down costs. So before it gets there, I mean, when we were working with these age-old distributors, they're having us ship things four or five times before it gets into the hands of the end user. We're watching it move, right, through the country in these ridiculous patterns, all for the sake of like outdated bureaucratic systems. When you ship something like needles or syringes or, you know, IV catheters or whatever it may be, right? In the healthcare space, every time you ship it, it costs about 20% the cost of the product.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'm going to ship that five times, it's not about greed or money. It's about to cover your butts, to be able to not lose money on the delivery of these supplies to the end users. You've got to mark it up,
yep,
you know, at least 100%. And that's what a lot of these sort of distributors are doing. It's huge inefficiencies that are leading to increased costs for people like you and me. And on the other hand, you know, Grapevine's able to help doctors actually within their practice, right? So we can actually see in enough detail to know per patient visit, you know, these different nurses or these different locations are using four needles per patient visit instead of one needle per patient visit, right? And those sort of insights, the cause, it could be they're over ordering, they're leaving stuff in the closet and it's never getting used and it's expiring. In some cases, that's exactly the cause. In other cases, you've got physicians or nurses or, you know, practitioners that are practicing medicine in an ugly way. And it's as much as a couple of training sessions on how to poke the needle right that can cut down your cost significantly. So Grapevine, you know, is there to not only connect all of your vendors into one screen and introduce you to the vendors that you don't yet know you need, but also point out sort of behavioral problems within the practice itself. Overuse, misuse, and standardize the way that your patients receive patient care.
Well, and I love that because I think that points to one of those really interesting things about change and innovation is that there's often these second order impacts that may or may not be expected, right? And I don't think it's necessarily intuitive that a startup that is helping folks save money by operating more efficiently may also be able to identify training requirements or do benchmarking on quality of care, or at least indicators of benchmarking quality of care versus, you know, versus other clinics, other hospitals. That's really fascinating. How much of this did you sort of see going into this when you founded the company 18 months ago? And how much are you learning along the way?
There's a quote I really like. It's a Steve Jobs quote, and it talks about one of the greatest diseases in corporate America, disease that having a great plan is enough to make a great product.
Yeah.
And I only read that recently after I learned that the hard way. But when I read it, I remember because it resonated with me so much. If you asked me to reinvent the supply chain 4 years ago, right, before we had any foray into the space, the plan would have looked nothing like what we have today. Even 18 months ago, when we were launching, things were incredibly different than I now understand them to be, right? As you dissect a problem and as you try to build a solution for people who need it, you become more intimately involved with the problems themselves and you're able to make better and better products. So not much of this is planned, in all honesty. We had big dreams, but the dreams are now bigger and way smarter than they once were. And I'm sure that in another 18 months, we'll learn so many things to be able to have such a greater impact than we're now even delivering.
That's awesome to hear. You know, there's a book, I don't know if you've read it. I think it's How Big Things Get Done, I think is the title. It's really fascinating because it's talking about mega projects, right? Tunnels, giant towers, bridges, whatever. But it kind of makes the point that failure comes from lack of planning, but plans fail from lack of learning. And, you know, it is a really interesting tension for all of us, but certainly in kind of an innovation or trying to do something new space, like how do you walk that line between learning, staying close to your customers, adapting your product, adapting your service versus sticking to some level of conviction about what you believe the world should look like so that you're not just getting pulled randomly in any given direction?
It's obviously important to plan, and you can't be a prisoner of the moment. But I think the magic of entrepreneurship happens, you know, there's a Mike Tyson quote, right? Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. You got to make a great plan. And without a great plan, you're hopelessly lost. But it's what happens after you get punched in the face, how you respond and how you adapt, right? Navigating not just the latest and greatest information, but building that information, that feedback, you know, the customer observation, building that database up, sifting through it and finding the most important sort of key details, the most important problems, and outthinking and outsmarting those problems. That's, I think, the magic of entrepreneurship and solution delivery, you know, even beyond sort of company and business settings. It's hard. We're still learning about that process. And every day we uncover new things, but you got to sort of see the patterns of problems that recur across like-minded people and then focus on those long enough to actually deliver solutions. And once we understand the problem, that's half of it, right? But actually building the right solution is a whole nother thing, because people have in mind one thing. You can build exactly that thing, but what they really want is something much greater than they can imagine, something that only a person who obsesses over their problems,
yep,
right, can really imagine. Yeah, and again, these are healthcare workers, healthcare practices. They're obsessing over the patient as they should be. And it's our job at Grapevine and our job as health tech entrepreneurs to obsess over their problems and make life easier for them.
So what's punched you in the face, Lukai, recently?
I've been getting smarter and dodging those punches a lot better these days. But I mean, immediately after launching, so our first 6 months post-launch were what some might call, you know, a bust. Yeah. We even lost a founder in that process, right? I had a lot of doubt myself because we had made a great plan. We spent, you know, whatever, 6 to 12 months building a product exactly in line with the plan that we had done surveys on and were sure was what people wanted. And it flopped, right? Like, we had a huge list of customers, right? A lot of them started using the platform. In theory, it sounded good, but in experience, it wasn't what they wanted. They churned. We weren't able to deliver the savings because people weren't patient enough with our system and our software to actually achieve what we were talking about. And we realized that it's about so much more than just saving dollars. It's about, you know, making life easier. Like, every minute of life that's inconvenient throughout ordering supplies, which frankly is all the entire world of ordering supplies, is not something healthcare workers should engage with at all. And trying to make things easier and better for those people, that we ended up having a really strong last 12 months, adapting the way that we talk about our product, the way we pitch it, the way we sell it, you know, the cost we assign to it, and, you know, the success that we say, okay, that's achieved, that's success. Our whole definition of all of those things, you know, had to get recalibrated after such a flop. But I'm a strong believer that the building blocks of success can only be found in the rubble of our own failure. And if you're not strong enough to fight through, you know, events of failure, then it's going to be very hard to succeed, especially in making change.
Well, and that, like, that's a really powerful and true statement. And it is incredibly hard for a lot of people, right? Like, the consequences of failure can be challenging. Like, it's really easy to say you should learn from failure. It's really easy to ask the question, do you get rewarded for the insights that you've derived from failure and how you apply them to the future? It's entirely another thing when you're on the front line, you're dealing with health, you're dealing literally with life and death, or you're dealing with an environment where you feel like, you know, I might get patted on the back and told I did a good job if I fail at something, but then I'm not going to get my bonus, or my job's going to disappear. Or, you know, there's all of these counter forces. You're selling into a very tough industry. It's an industry that's complex, right? There's so many players and it's hard to drive change. So what are you seeing in terms of the willingness of your customers to do something a little different? And who are your customers? Is this administration? Is it medical practitioners? Who's driving the change?
Yeah, there's two different ways that we've seen Grapevine adopted and roll out within a healthcare practice or a healthcare system, right? There's the top down, which has more to do with, you know, communicating and talking with leadership, specifically financial leadership, about opportunities to save huge amounts of money. And, you know, then propagating that opportunity down to the level of the clinicians, the nurses, the office managers, right, that actually know when something's out of stock or use the supplies, you know, with the patient. And then engaging with the clinicians or the office managers to handle sort of the reordering and optimization of supplies and subbing in and subbing out products and so on. And that's sort of the more top-down adoption that we've seen with larger institutions where the decisions are made by those higher level people. But we also have seen it, right, in success in working directly with the clinicians themselves, right? And the pitch is very different in that setting. It's not about saving money. It's about saving them time, about letting them order on their feet when they open the supply cabinet. Do you know that of all those big multi-hundred-billion-dollar, you know, revenue industry giants that dominate the space, not one of them has an app that you can order supplies from your phone? You got to go back to your desktop computer. You got to think about
that. Unreal.
I'm in the patient. I open the cabinet. There's no needle to draw blood. What do you do?
Yeah.
Well, pause, remember that, right? You know, write it down or something and then bring it back to your desk because 3 hours later, that's when you're going to order your supplies. So it's the little things that actually matter to the clinicians to make their lives easier in managing supplies and letting them focus on the patient that have been a huge success point. And from there, Grapevine can propagate through to the top, to the decision makers, and we can start implementing different practices to save money. So we see it flow sort of two different ways, but both have led to great success.
That's awesome. You know, there's another founder that came on the podcast a few episodes back, a woman named Chaney, and she's in the health space out of Canada. She said something really interesting. She said, you know, nothing kind of weighs us down more than kind of the weight of the status quo when we know it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you know, that example you just gave is so fascinating, right? We know that technology today is capable of allowing just-in-time ordering, note-taking, making it so we don't have to, you know, remember to refill the cabinet. And the dissatisfaction that you can sell into seems to come from the gap between what they have to do today and just knowing that it's possible. Do you find those little points of dissatisfaction are really useful triggers to have a deeper conversation?
Absolutely. I think that I think it's human nature to be scared of the future and scared of change that comes with the future. And we talk about here at Grapevine this concept of 11:59 p.m. It's the moment where today, the present, you know, meets tomorrow, the future. And that's where you need to bring your customers to be a comfortable and silly minute away from the future, right? You need to meet them where they're at. And you need to preserve what's important to them while upgrading the things that frustrate them. And that's what a lot of the first 6 months, you know, dealing with those punches and recalibrating, that's what it was all about, right? Like understanding not just how on paper, you know, or in reality, you can save a business a lot of money and how that's a good thing, but the tiny details that make the step into tomorrow very smooth and very effortless. And it comes from the small things, the things that aren't easy for the customer to explain to you, the things that are, you know, implied. And you understand that when you really study and obsess over the customer and their experience and their struggles and their priorities.
So what are you tracking these days that inspires you? You know, 11:59, moving into the next day. What's in the headlines? What's happening in tech or around us that gets you to just kind of lean in and be like, oh, this is cool. This is why I'm optimistic and why I'm doing it. Have you seen anything recently?
Well, I'm definitely an optimist. And I think it takes a bit of an optimist to,
a little bit,
you know, take the risks and do the types of things that we're doing. I'm fascinated by almost anything if I stare at it and study it long enough. So there are a lot of things that have captured my attention in my world. The details and the beauty of logistics and moving supplies from point A to point B more efficiently, standardizing information for different sources, but they're not the sexy like headliner events. Like honestly, yeah, when it comes to things like machine learning and AI, we use it. There are basic models that are folded into the way that shoppers shop, the way that we calculate misuse or, you know, clinical behavior in overuse of certain supplies. But those things are tools at the disposal of entrepreneurs to be applied to new problems. The things that really excite me are better understanding like where today is, and then marrying it to the most cutting edge tools that are out there. And yeah, that's where we've, you know, we've made magic happen.
Well, and I hear you. Although I think a predictive model that can actually help someone make an informed decision about what they're going to need in the future, I think that's pretty sexy. Like, this is stuff that we've been talking about for years, decades, but is actually becoming much more of a reality, right? There are tools available to you off the shelf that help you build something that possibly prevents the nurse from ever actually having to think about ordering in the future, yeah, right? And I mean, like, all of a sudden we're living in a world where we're kind of like, wait, of course that's possible. Of course that's possible. And now it's hard, right? It turns out it's actually a little bit harder to get these predictive algorithms to take into account every variable than we think. But of course it's possible.
No, it's really cool. We look at things like upcoming scheduled patient visits, right? Like, which, sure, by the way, they vary a ton throughout the season, right? Like, a certain type of doctor might see 10 times as many patients in December, you know, if they're treating flu or different types of things. So we actually read in upcoming scheduled patient visits that feeds our algorithms to predict how much supply you're going to need. And then we adjust orders that are automatically placed without you going on your computer, going on your phone, right? We know the supplies that you need. Yeah. We know the types of patients that you're seeing coming up, what's going to be used in those clinical settings. And the orders, the entire supply chain can really be put on autopilot. And I do think it's sexy, by the way, Ian. Yeah. But I've been told by some of our VC partners who have given us money, which is crazy. They're like, yeah, we love these very unsexy, boring, you know, types of problems. That's our niche. And I'm like,
I love investing in boring.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, I guess that's what we are, man.
No, you know what? There's a difference between boring and one of those problems that nobody is actually spending enough time thinking about. And therefore, it's just not, you know, the common lingo. I don't know. I was talking to a health system, a big international health system, not in the US, not that long ago. They were telling me that they have, depending on the time of year and the area of practice, between 30 and 60% no-show rates, and it's unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, so that's a problem for lots of reasons. But one of those reasons is consumables and its placement of the consumables and its expiration and it's the enormous amount of costs associated with them. So, like, you know, there's stuff just in this conversation that's clicking for me and connecting patient communications with externalities like everything from weather to holidays that get in the way to supply chain. And you're like, oh man, there's a lot of data out there to work with. And where there's data, there's room for optimization. And where there's room for optimization, there's room for innovation. So super cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, you're speaking my language.
All right. I want to get to know you a bit better. You want to play a little bit of a game with me? A little bit of a rapid fire game?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to ask you some quick questions. We might talk about them. We might not. Apple or Android?
Apple.
Oh, see, I don't know where it is. I'm going to hold up my Android and we're going to agree to disagree. There you go. Are you the kind of nerd that watched the Apple announcements, the WDC and Apple?
I definitely did. I'm a huge Steve Jobs fanboy.
Yeah,
and
all should be.
I'm actually privileged enough to, we were at JP Morgan Healthcare Conference in San Fran this past January. And I was privileged enough to actually be invited to invest in venture capital event at Reed Jobs' house. And I met Reed Jobs, which was pretty cool for me. Then I've now met him a couple times. So yeah, I'm an Apple guy.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And if only, you know, we had, I think, more folks with not a little bit of the vision, but also the ability to get it done that we had there. All right, dog or cat?
I got a dog, so I got to pick dog. Otherwise, she'll come over here and bite my ankle.
Yes, she will. Space tech or ocean tech?
Space tech. And I would tell you space tech specifically because I want this all to matter. And for this to really, really matter long term, right? I want it to last forever, right? So we can look back and I'm grateful for everything that came before me. And I guess that's part of what mattering means to me, right? Is doing something important enough or valuable enough that people look back and they may not know my name or my company or anything that we've done, but they're grateful for what came before them. And I want that to be a part of the world and conquering other planets, inhabiting them and, you know, increasing our odds of perpetuity is something that's important to me. So space.
That's awesome. There's definitely something to Elon Musk's sort of like vision of the light of human consciousness needs to spread so it doesn't go out. And I do find that inspiring. I also think it's really just bloody cool to watch two rockets landing themselves at the same time. Like, if anybody doesn't get their mind blown by like that first Falcon Heavy like double landing video, I don't actually know what to do with those people.
Well, I'm also really into the idea of like terraforming, which is, you know, fringe space tech, which is the idea of like, okay, we got all these sustainability and environmental problems here on Earth, and a lot of it's the same, the innovator's dilemma. This is a big system and there's a lot of moving parts here on planet Earth, and making a small tweak. You got guys like Bill Gates talking about releasing particulate into the air to block out some of the UV light so it goes down. Yeah.
You know, we've all seen Snowpiercer. We know what's going to happen there.
Yeah. So we can't and we shouldn't experiment on planet Earth. But if we can get the opportunity to experiment on other orbiting spheres and try to make those habitable, to then take those practices here in a safe, tried, true, tested way, you know, that would be pretty damn cool. And I love Earth. I want to live here forever. I don't want to go to Mars, but it'd be cool to know that this thing is in good hands and that we've got responsive systems that can keep, you know, keep the planet in a state that's good and healthy for us and the animals we love.
In person or remote work?
Depends on the task, but I think that there's value in the conversations that happen between meetings, outside of meetings, and the moments where you're passing by someone and they say something and that sparks an idea. I think it's, you know, important to have people around you to breathe life into, you know, the best possible work you can produce.
I don't know how to plan or bond over Zoom over an extended period of time.
Yeah, right? Like me and you, if we could go to the coffee room after this and get a nice coffee and talk about Ben a little bit more if we were in person, but instead it'll end right at the end.
Talk about the ethics of long-term terraforming on unknown systems.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, we totally could. All right. I'm actually really worried about your answer to this one. TikTok or Insta?
Definitely. I only have Instagram on my phone, but I don't use social media at all. The one thing I do use is I use actually Facebook, which makes me kind of an old man amongst my peers. I use Facebook when I'm in the shower. I'll listen to like different like sports radio segments that are like 7 to 10 minute long clips. So Facebook's the only social media I'm using. Yeah. So I'd go neither.
That is not the answer. That is not the answer that I expected, but it's going to keep you healthier than most of the world in some ways.
Yeah.
Favorite fast food?
I mean, I'm a chicken guy, but it's not the chicken guys that make the best chicken. I like a crispy chicken sandwich. And homegrown in New York, I'm picking a crispy chicken sandwich from Shake Shack every place, which is interesting because their primary thing is beef, but they make a hell of a chicken sandwich.
Shake Shack's a hell of a place. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. Awesome. Okay, well, we've also got a little bit of a grab bag of questions that folks have sent into us. And this is one I've actually been holding. I've been holding for a recent founder. And it was sent in by not a founder, actually, but someone who wants to go deep a little. When was the last time you cried at work or felt like crying?
This is going to make me look bad, if I'm honest here.
It's never going to make you look bad.
I don't do this daily, and I don't do this. It's probably like once every 3 months or something. I'm a pretty emotional guy. I'll admit that about myself. But I actually cried just yesterday, tears of joy, not frustration. I've released both. But these were, one of our developers who's actually originally from Nigeria, but is making the big move to the United States. And we've been helping him with all of his paperwork because he's incredibly talented. And my dad's an immigrant, and you know, I think it's part of the American dream. Yeah, he sent me a really heartfelt message about how Grapevine has become. His name is Halim Youssef. I'm giving a shout out to you, Halim, if you're listening.
Go Halim.
Yeah, and he sent me a message, and then you know, proceeded to call me, but basically explaining how Grapevine has become like a child to him, and as we've grown and trusted him, and even brought in his friends, he now feels a responsibility to actually, you know, not just keep this thing going for the sake of Grapevine, but keep it going for the sake of the friends that he's brought in, and that the world is sort of relying on him to do it, and the customers that we've been serving. And it was something that aligned with me so much that I actually shed a couple tears about it.
Amazing. Well, look, I think it's pretty clear that you have found a fair bit of meaning and inspiration in something that might be unsexy and boring in the words of certain investors, but is actually really impactful. And it's clear that that is shared by others on the team. So I think that's absolutely wonderful. And I appreciate you sharing that. It's the emotional side of these journeys, ups and downs, I think are really important for everyone to hear about. Look, it's been amazing to have you on the podcast. For folks who maybe want to continue this conversation a little more indirectly, where can they follow your work? Are you on LinkedIn? Are you, you know, speaking? Where can folks kind of follow you and Grapevine?
Yeah, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn. I left that out of my answer earlier. That's probably my most active social media platform for outputting any sort of content or anything. So I'm on LinkedIn. So yeah, Lukai Yiannopoulos, I'm sure the name will be somewhere in the podcast description. And as far as, yeah, I guess if you're still listening at this point, guys, Grapevine is also a totally free to use platform for healthcare practice. Everything that we're talking about that we delivered to healthcare practices, potentially like your own, those tools are completely free. Like I said, there is no cost and there's a lot of savings and opportunity there. So I would, for that reason, if that's what you're looking for, you could go to go-grapevine.com. That's go-grapevine.com. And it's free to sign up.
Awesome. Well, everyone should go check out go-grapevine. Follow Lukai on LinkedIn. We'll link to all that in the show notes. Thank you for joining us on Innovators Inside, sharing a bit of your journey. It's been absolutely wonderful. And I want to wish you the most wonderful rest of your week and weekend.
Thank you very much for having me, Ian, and appreciate everything. And I hope you enjoy the day and the rest of the summer with Ben.
Cheers. See ya. Thanks. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. Thanks for listening. If you found value in today's discussion, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and check out our segments on YouTube. Links and follow-ups are in the show notes. And if you have questions you want us to feature in future episodes, email innovators@alchemistaccelerator.com. Stay tuned for more insider stories and practical insights from leaders crafting our future.